This episode is brought to you in part by Richmond Graduate University. The field of mental health counseling is growing rapidly. Richmond Graduate University can equip you to become a licensed professional counselor, integrating your faith into your clinical practice. Programs are offered in Atlanta, Chattanooga, and online. Apply today at richmond.edu.
You're listening to Seeing and Believing, a film and television podcast that searches for the sacred on screen. I'm Wade Bearden.
And I'm Kevin McClinathan, and I hope that you have some Just for Men handy, Wade, because between the movie that we're watching this week, or maybe my opinions on it, you might have a few more gray hairs at the end of this episode.
Well, Kevin, I don't have any Just for Men, but I do have my usual stack of Axe body spray.
Well, in case the reference to Axe body spray maybe dates you a little bit less than my reference to Just for Men, so you might be doing okay.
Listeners, today we are looking at the new film from M. Night Shyamalan, Old.
We do guarantee that at the end of this episode, you will be at least half an hour older. Hopefully not anymore, though. That review is coming up on episode 299 of Seeing and Believing.
No kids allowed on the beach? What?
That's not true!
Oh, no! Oh, no!
We never leave each other. Nothing separates us.
Are we there yet? You said 5 minutes. Technically, it's been more than 5 minutes.
Let's just all start slowing down.
Wow, can you believe I found this online?
I guess it's not that secret a beach.
Whoa, who would leave this?
From the hotel, they're so rusted.
What's happening?
Found stuff from the hotel in the sand.
Ready or not, here we come! Yes,
listeners, we are here with episode 299 of Seeing and Believing. Kevin, this is a momentous episode for us because it's actually the last episode we'll ever need to record, because we can just take all of our previous episodes, upload them into a computer, and an AI system will actually generate the reviews for us. It'll be our voices and everything. It's going to be fantastic, and we'll have a chance to hear our opinions rather than give our opinions.
Yeah, it's the movie review podcast equivalent of syndication for a TV show. Like, we're almost to 300 episodes now. I think it's time for you and I to just kick back, let the reruns happen, and watch the checks roll in.
Yeah. And I mean, I feel like a system would do a really good job of analyzing my previous opinions and then formulating new opinions based on those. So like an MCU movie will come out and it will be my voice and it will say, yeah, it's not great, but I enjoyed it. And they would probably be correct in that assessment.
I mean, you joke, but we're probably only about 5 years from that happening anyway. So, you know, I don't know if this is going to be so much science fiction as prophetic.
Yeah. So episode 300 coming in next week. We've got a great episode planned. We're still kind of working through some of the details. But Kevin, we will be reviewing David Lowry's The Green Knight. And we were thinking about doing something special, and we will do something special. But we realized we do need to review this film because it's one of our most anticipated movies of the year for both of us. And we got to get our thoughts out there.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing that film quite a bit. And we had to fit in a review of it somehow. And that, you know, that this upcoming weekend is going to be a huge one for new releases anyway. So I don't know, there would probably have been some riots if we didn't have any reviews of any of them. Hmm. So, you know, we're going to at least get The Green Knight in there, and also a segment that we are putting details together for now, but you'll just have to wait until next week to hear them.
Yeah. Couple of movies next week. Stillwater's coming out. Maybe we'll get to that. You know what film, Kevin? At first I thought, oh, this is going to be dumb, but I kind of want to see it. I want to see Jungle Cruise. It looks like a fun adventure. It's got The Rock. It's got Emily Blunt. I'm hoping that it will be a good time.
You know, I kind of felt this a similar way. I saw Jungle Cruise like, oh, you know, great. You know, here's another Disney property. And then I saw that Jesse Plemons is in it as a comical Nazi. And I, you know, I kind of want to see the movie just for him and see what he does with that role, because that seems pretty inspired to me.
Okay, I didn't even know that. Now I'm definitely, I don't know when I'm going to get around to it, because this is kind of a busy week coming up, and we're preparing for a special segment, and we're doing a review of the Green Knight. So I might not watch it this next week, but I'm really excited to see that now. That's funny. This could be kind of a comical version of Indiana Jones, maybe, or the African Queen. I don't know. Well, I guess we'll see when it comes.
Yeah, I guess we'll just have to see.
Yeah. Well, listeners, before we jump into our review of Old, I do want to alert you to our Patreon campaign. So many of our listeners have taken an opportunity to support us over the years. Some people do it by posting reviews, providing feedback, giving generous tips to the show, and then others through our Patreon page. If you'd like to support us, we got a number of different donation levels with perks. Some of them include swag. Some of them include a personalized list. Some of them include a review from any movie of your choice. So make sure to check that out. One of our favorite levels is the What Can You Buy for $5 level. Kevin, we're talking about the Jungle Cruise. So I'm hoping there'll be some sort of thematic connection there. But what could someone buy for $5?
Oh, man. $5 would get you a toucan beak for all of your valuables. So, you know, like how there once upon a time, there was kind of like the puka shell necklace that, you know, guys would wear around their necks. And, you know, then there's fanny packs were in for a mercifully brief while. I think the next big thing is going to be imitation toucan beaks for, you know, to hold like your phone, or maybe your whatever the modern equivalent of a Tamagotchi is, like all of those things. Just throw them into this toucan beak, hang it down by your belt with pride. I think I'm calling it now. That's going to be the next big fashion accessory of the 2020s.
Wow. No, I mean, and $5, so cheap. So many people can buy it. They'll get to the top of the market control. I love it. Listeners, if you've already got a fanny pack or something similar and you don't want to upgrade right now, you could hop on over and join our Patreon. $5 a month for that level, and there are a number of different donation levels. Check it out, patreon.com/seeing_believing_podcast.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
We're going to jump into our review of Old, directed by M. Night Shyamalan and based on the graphic novel Sandcastle by Pierre Oscar Levy and Frederick Peters. Old tells the story of a family on a tropical holiday who suddenly discover that a secluded beach is somehow causing them to age rapidly, reducing their entire lives into a single day. At the center of the story lies a family fighting for survival in more ways than one. The film stars Gael Garcia Bernal, Vicky Creeps, Alex Wolff, and Thomasin McKenzie. Kevin, M. Night Shyamalan It's funny that we make so many different rounds here on Seeing and Believing. We've been around for 299 episodes. We've reviewed Split. We've reviewed The Visit. We've reviewed Glass. And I feel like I've been more on the positive side of those films than you have. I've generally liked this recent M. Night resurgence. And now we're coming to his most recent film, Old. I wanted to get your thoughts. How do you feel about this? Do you feel like you're kind of in the middle? Okay, yeah, it's fine. Or does this film finally take you into positive territory after so many years?
Well, I feel like I'm pretty much in the same place with Old that I've been with M. Night Shyamalan for a while, in that, with the exception of The Visit, I thought the Visit was a lot of fun. It was just kind of like a goofy kind of popcorn film. I had a good time with that one. I think that's probably my favorite of kind of the new wave of Shyamalan, if you will. And I don't think Old really surpasses even that film. The thing with Old is it kind of fits into a pattern that's really common with Shyamalan, where it's really good for a while until it's really bad for a while. And unfortunately, the bad usually outweighs the good. And I don't think Old is really any exception. And we can kind of get into the specifics of, you know, the points at which that transition happens for me, because I don't want to say that this is a total failure on the level of something like, I don't know, the Happening or Avatar: The Last Airbender, but I don't think it's a very good movie. And I think that there's a lot of ideas floating around in here. Like, nobody can ever accuse Shyamalan of just cashing a paycheck or, you know, making a movie just to make a movie. Like, he always has something to say. And I do appreciate that about his films. I just think that his screenplays aren't as good at saying things as his directing is, if that makes sense. I think he's a better director than a screenwriter. And I kind of wish that he would direct screenplays other than his own.
Yeah, you know, you get this sense with M. Night Shyamalan. Like you said, he's not doing it for the money. He genuinely loves to tell stories. And I heard him talk once, and he mentioned how he'll either get paid less or he'll work some sort of system out to where he has control over any sequels made for his films. And that's why Glass is the only sequel. I guess Split is kind of a part of that too, that universe of his that have been made, because he is protective of these stories and he likes to tread new ground. I like Old. I think it's a pretty decent film. M. Night Shyamalan still struggles to write dialogue, and that's pretty apparent here, but he knows how to direct. He knows how to use the camera, and he knows how to make you feel something. And I appreciated that. I wish I could even do a deep dive. It would probably require spoilers to contrast a horror film like this and your traditional, I guess you could say, like the subgenre of horror films that are like A24 horror films. And the lead up in this film, till about halfway, is really kind of along those same lines, and then it diverges. And I wonder if that's one of the reasons why many people who have a problem with this film have a problem with the second half. I don't know. And I'd love to get your thoughts on that, because this goes to a different place. And I like that. And I like the second half of this movie. But I want to hear what you have to say about that divergence and where this film in your mind goes off the rails.
Okay. So, well, I guess, you know, earlier I said that, you know, it fits a template where it's really good until it's really bad. And I don't think that's quite accurate now that I'm really thinking about what I just said. I think it's more that this film is really bad, and then it gets really good, and then it gets bad again. And to answer you know, kind of the question you posed, I want to actually see some your labeling of this as a horror film, because I think that's true. I think this is a horror movie. And I think therein maybe lies the problem. The reason that I liked The Visit probably the most of his latter day films is I think in The Visit, he kind of knew what he was making. He was making kind of this fun little movie that was, you know, intended to kind of make you jump. It was intended to kind of goose the audience, get a reaction out of them. And it's just kind of this fun, rollicking, schlocky film. It knows what it is and it leans into that. I think with Old, though, it is a horror film. The premise is mostly played for horror. There are certain sequences in this film that are very much like lean into body horror big time. And I think that's maybe where the film is at strongest, is kind of in this middle section where things start to really go off the rails for our characters on this beach. And yet that those segments where it really leans into the horror are just so few and far between. And so much of the film is really taken up with just this very, very broad characterization of all the people on this beach, this very ham-fisted exposition where literally characters are sitting and saying, I'm a nurse, so I know how to do this. Another person says, well, I'm an insurance actuary, so I know about this. And it's all very, it's done with maximum artlessness, I think. And the parts where a lot of the parts where there are some horror elements, it feels like Shyamalan's almost kind of filming around it in order to get that PG-13 rather than leaning into, okay, let's go full on, you know, body horror. Like, what happens to a body when it ages rapidly? What happens if somebody is pregnant on a beach where you age rapidly? Like, what kinds of things are possible with that premise? And he kind of gestures in that direction, but then he never really goes as far or as crazy as he should. He seems like he wants to make something a little bit more cerebral like these A24 horror films. But the problem is he's not a subtle enough writer to really make that kind of prestige horror feeling work for him. And so it kind of just feels like, on the one hand, it's almost like this, almost like a slasher where like people die one by one and it's all very broadly pitched. And then it kind of shifts into a more prestige horror mode where it seems to want to be a little bit more heady than that. And he's got to pick one. He's got to pick a target. And I think because he doesn't, the film kind of, to me, feels like a big mess.
I don't think he has to pick one. I think Shyamalan, he wants to make his own movie, and he's never going to make those R-rated Midsommar films. It's never going to be him because it's just not who he is. And this is probably the quote unquote edgiest film that he's ever made, in that there's one scene where there's kind of partial nudity. There's a sex scene that's alluded to, but not shown. Like, that's as edgy as M. Night Shyamalan is going to get. And that's fine, because that's him. And that's who he is. And that's who someone like Spielberg is as well. It is what it is. I thought what he was trying to do is to offer this sort of existential horror versus this body visual imagery manipulation horror. So we're seeing a couple of graphic things, but he really wants us to consider the psychology of growing old. And I don't know, I found that to be pretty effective versus someone kind of just hitting me over the head with one grisly image after the other. I thought that some of his ideas were fascinating. And you're right, I think some of the dialogue is just not written well. At the same time, like, it's also very obvious this is a film about people who go to a beach and they age on the beach. So it's not anything incredibly realistic. And so a lot of the characters are types. And so there's this mention throughout the movie of these characters. What do you do? Who are you? And so much of what they talk about is based on their occupation. And for someone who's creating a story about aging and what we do with our time, and we're on a beach, and this is like a parable of our lives, then people constantly talking about what they do is a reflection of how most of our lives is really, it's about work, and how that work becomes part of our identity, maybe in good ways and maybe in bad ways. So like I said, it's kind of clunky at times, but I don't know. I think there's something there, and I appreciate it not going full-blown A24 or body horror, because it's different. And I feel like, I feel like this film is kind of bold and fearless in that way, versus, you know, this like bleak ending, and the last image is just like everything's terrible and bad and cut to black. Like it's just different than that, and I appreciate it.
Oh, you used the word clunkiness, and I guess that's the big sticking point for me, is that I can imagine a version of this film where what you said about it kind of being a parable or having this very simplified quality to it, where it actually works, where, you know, the concept of all these people kind of constantly talking about their occupations and being almost types rather than flesh and blood human beings, where that actually kind of works. And I can imagine that being interesting, but I just don't think Shyamalan executes it very well. I think he doesn't have it on the page in a way that feels right for it being kind of a simplified parable feel, because this film spends so much time really talking out kind of the nitty gritty of the details, where they literally sit down and they say, okay, a half hour on this beach is 1 year of our lives, and bodies decompose at such and such a rate. So that means this body's been here for this long. And they really break it down into the details, where he's inviting us to really, you know, think of it in more grounded terms rather than a more parable-like feel or a more dreamlike feel. And I think that just sinks the whole enterprise. It's obvious that Shyamalan really admires Hitchcock. Like, Hitchcock's influence is pretty clear in his work, just, and you understand, you see the DNA of kind of the Hitchcockian potboiler in Shyamalan's work. And that's all well and good, but I think Shyamalan really needs to take maybe a little bit of a cue from, you know, the films of David Lynch, where you watch a Lynch film, like you watch Blue Velvet, and Dennis Hopper's character, Frank Booth, there's so much about him that goes completely unexplained, where you don't quite know why does he have the oxygen mask. You don't know quite how, you know, he's become the person he is. He's a malevolent force who is kind of overshadowing everything in the story. And it's less important to know the details about him than to just know he's bad and to just kind of feel that in your bones rather than have it explained to you. And I think there are moments in this, in Old, where we kind of see bits of that peeking through. And I appreciate that. For instance, when the characters are first moving onto the beach, there's this shot that Shyamalan includes of them walking through this slot canyon. And he has this slow motion shot of them kind of walking in profile past the camera. And, you know, they're, you know, the women's swimsuits are kind of, there's this billowing effect on this sarong that one of them is wearing. Another one is kind of swinging a basket or a purse or something. And so it's all just, it's got this dreamlike quality. And I think if that kind of quality had suffused the entire film, I wouldn't have as many quibbles with, you know, it feeling unrealistic or clunky, because it would feel almost like a dream. Like, these people are trapped on a beach. They don't quite know why, and things begin to affect them. I think that would be a very intriguing movie. I think what we got here is something that kind of wants to be suggestive in that way, but is constantly tying itself down to earth with these petty questions that really aren't that important. It doesn't matter who, you know, why somebody knows the statistics for how many people die on vacation. It doesn't matter how many minutes equal 1 year on this beach. What matters is, okay, they're on this beach. How does that affect them? How does that affect us, the viewer? And I just found precious little of that in this film. And it was a disappointment when these flashes of a better film peaked through, because I saw what it could have been instead of what it was.
I mean, I think some of those conversations, obviously some of them weren't written well. Some of them were what people would talk about in that situation. Another point in the film that I enjoyed is that, and I don't think this is getting too much into spoilers, is in any other horror film that's trying to be a prestige horror film, the characters on the beach, it would have turned into the study of how humanity fights against each other. They all would have fought together and you know, rivalries would have been created. They would have torn each other apart from within. And we've got one plot that kind of works that way, but it's because of a particular illness. But they all generally, they don't work together all that well, but they don't tear each other apart. And I think some of those flashes kind of give you a hint into the little bit of hope that is in Shyamalan and in his work and kind of across his work. And we'll never let him go full David Lynch or some of these other routes that we've kind of mentioned before. Camera work, you mentioned a really fantastic shot in the movie. I like this sort of roving camera, camera kind of circling characters. Cameras are behind objects. You get the sense that somebody's watching these individuals from the very beginning, from when they first arrive at this resort, before they even head to the beach. And some of the handheld shots, you feel the hectic nature of this environment. And I think particularly too, Shyamalan has this way of moving the camera around and concealing objects in people and letting you just anticipate when that image will come. And sometimes it comes, sometimes it doesn't come. And I think either way, it's pretty effective. He has this, he's got this skill, and there's a reason why early in his career, people were comparing him to Spielberg, because he just has those classical filmmaking, a filmmaker's eye. And he can just kind of see some of these shots. And I really do appreciate that too. You know, we'll eventually get into some of the themes, because I think some of the themes are important. There is something to think about. But all that to say is, just on a nuts and bolts level, I appreciate this movie. And I found myself pretty entertained and intrigued and also emotionally invested across this viewing.
I mean, I will say that as far as emotional investment goes, the part where this movie gets really good, I think, is, you know, it's maybe it's towards the end of the second act, beginning of the third act, is about 60% of the way through the movie, where the night has fallen, I guess. So by this point, they've been on the beach for a while. Lots of crazy things have happened to them up to that point. But it's a little bit of a respite that Shyamalan puts in here, where things have quieted down and the characters have a chance to sort of sit and feel what their situation is. You know, they're no longer trying to problem solve. They're no longer, there's no bickering. There's no immediate danger. It's just them sitting on a darkened beach trying to figure out, okay, well, now that we've kind of realized our predicament, what happens next? And there's this shot that Shyamalan has. It's a single take, but the camera moves, and he essentially follows one character down to the water's edge and then sort of dollies back again towards the right, and then Dolly's back towards the left again. And it's this shot that really mimics the rising and falling of the tide. It's essentially his camera has become the waves that we've been hearing throughout the entire film. And he kind of just, it's this gentle motion that really is so expressive of the film's central theme, which is that, you know, life really is precious and, you know, it comes and it goes, and that's just the way of things. And I think in that moment, this movie touches greatness. I just loved that entire sequence, and I thought it was wonderful. I think it was the one point where, and I guess it's also notable because there's no dialogue in that stretch. It's all Shyamalan working with image and sound, no actual characters speaking. And it's maybe telling that that's such a wonderful sequence. And the one immediately following it, where a couple of characters just decide, you know what, let's just build a sandcastle. And they build a sandcastle, and the simplicity of the shots there, just the way that Shyamalan kind of observes them just going about making a sandcastle, underlines his themes so much better than any number of ham-handed lines about how I can't wait to hear how you sing when you get older, or, you know, you are always living in the future. Well, you're always living in the past. Like, all that dialogue is ridiculous and terrible and is not necessary when Shyamalan does have these wonderful images in his back pocket. It's just, it's frustrating to me, I guess, that he doesn't seem to be interested in the most interesting part of his directorial arsenal.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fascinating observation, a great scene. And I found a scene between two characters who've experienced a reconciliation to be quite moving. I also think there are a couple of elements that are not necessarily talked about in the film, but if you're watching closely, I think they're profound. When we see characters aging, obviously the children, their aging process is more profound, because a child aging 10 years is much different than an adult in their 30s aging 10 years. And there are certain rules to how all that aging works. And you'll notice that the more apparent change happens at the beginning of a person's life and then at the end of a person's life. And in the middle, it's this kind of like gradual nature. And I think as these characters they're talking about their occupations, they're watching their children grow old before their eyes. There's this feeling of, wow, you look around and it doesn't seem like life is passing you by, but you have those reference points. And it's kind of like if you're swimming and you look to the beach far away, it doesn't look like you're moving very fast, but you look right next to you and you're like, wow, you know, I'm actually kind of moving fast. And as these parents are watching their children age, it just lends perspective, this visual perspective, to how fast life goes by. And we don't even realize it, just because of the period that we're in. We're in this, you know, middle age period. And I thought some of those scenes and some of those images work pretty well. And I think he is a little ham-fisted in those lines where the characters will say, you know, you're always thinking about the future. It makes me feel unseen. Yeah, those are not good. But there's still these ideas there. And then towards the end of the movie, and we can't talk too much about this for spoilers, but there are some other thematic ideas that are introduced. And I like the end. I think the end is pretty good. I think a lot of people have a problem with it, but I liked it.
Yeah, I mean, this is a Shyamalan movie, so, you know, endings are big in the Shyamalan verse. And yeah, I mean, I'll have to part ways with you on the ending. I don't think it's good. I think there's there's a shot that Shyamalan includes that he's in. He, you know, of course, this is going to continue the trend of Shyamalan, you know, having bit roles in his own films. Mm. And most of the time, you know, it's just kind of a cutesy thing, like, again, the Hitchcock cameo. But in this film, I think it really, there's a shot that where we're close to the end of the film, and we see the character that Shyamalan himself plays, and he's behind a camera. And that is just, I would have been so happy if the movie had just ended there, because that, again, it invites the audience, I guess, to reflect rather than be told things. And the sort of thing it would cause us to reflect on, essentially, you know, why do we go to movies, especially horror movies, where characters suffer? What do we learn from that? What do we take away from that? Or, you know, what does that say about us and about the artists who create these characters? I mean, that's interesting stuff to ruminate on. And then the movie keeps going, and it just, it's like the inverse of the people, the criticism that a lot of people have of Nolan, where, you know, the first part of his movie is just constant talking about explaining the premise before you can actually get to the good stuff. It feels like the ending of Shyamalan is just constant talking to underline and explain everything that doesn't really need explaining, because all the important stuff we understand and know. Mm. And it's this point that Shyamalan doesn't seem to trust some of his stronger ideas, and so kind of embroiders them around the edges in unnecessary ways. Almost as if he filmed a first draft of a script, where he kind of just got everything onto the page and never went back and actually made cuts.
Mm. Wow. Wow. No,
I gotta say, like, if I'm sounding really down on this movie, that's because I think it's maybe the contrast between the good parts, which I think are just some of the best stuff that Shyamalan's ever done, okay, with the bad parts, which is down near the bottom, I would say, of what Shyamalan has done.
Yeah, the part that Shyamalan plays is fascinating, and the roles he puts himself into, I think, you know, Lady in the Water, his role is just, it's kind of funny to think about that if you go back and watch that movie, which I like that movie too. But this one, and he sets himself as a chief transgressor. And you mentioned the camera, and it says something about time. And by all accounts, he seems like he's a family guy. And so those images of children growing up very fast, it just makes you kind of wonder, you know, what's going on in his mind, and what's the sort of meta quality to him playing the role that he's playing. So it's fascinating to think about that. Listeners, that's our review of Old. It's currently playing in theaters. If you've seen the movie, I would love to get your thoughts. Are you Team Wade, Team Kevin, maybe somewhere in between? Let us know. Give us a tweet at CBelievePod. At CBelievePod. You can also email us, seeingandbelievingcapc@gmail.com. Yeah, I mean, Old has a lot to think about, whether you're thinking about the nature of life, the fleetingness of life, how
you kind of wish that you weren't spending your fleeting life watching the Shyamalan movie.
All these ideas, and we didn't even get to some of the theological repercussions, but they're there. I think they're there. Let us know what you thought, listeners. We'd love to get those comments from you and hopefully read them on our next show. Kevin, we've reached the part of our episode where we recommend something from the world of television and or film to our listeners. What would you like to recommend today?
Well, I was thinking about movies about aging, about the aging process, and the one that I came up with was the 2005 film Broken Flowers, directed by Jim Jarmusch. This was a film that kind of cemented the Bill Murray is sad renaissance. Mm. You know, we had Lost in Translation, I think, back in 2003, where he, you know, definitely kind of leans into the mournful side of his screen persona, and Broken Flowers really doubles down on that. In this film, Murray plays kind of this aging Lothario who's gone through life. He's been a womanizer. He's had tons of girlfriends, and the film kicks off with his much younger girlfriend dumping him and leaving him, and Bill Murray's kind of by himself, kind of looking back on a life that was spent solely in the pursuit of his own pleasure, and now he's abandoned by himself. And then he receives an anonymous letter from a former flame saying that he has a child that he didn't know about. And the letter is anonymous, of course, so he doesn't know which girlfriend it is. So the entire film follows Murray's characters. He visits these former flames trying to decide, trying to find out if she is the one who wrote him this mysterious letter and where this long-lost child of his is right now. So it's a very quiet movie. It's a sad movie, as that premise might suggest. It's got kind of, you know, the Jim Jarmusch's trademark deadpan sense of humor in a lot of scenes, but yeah, it's a really great film. If you're kind of in the mood for, you know, ruminating on past regrets and what getting old does to one's perspective, I think that Broken Flowers is a really good film to spend some time with.
I have not seen that movie, but I've always come across the cover. I really like the cover of kind of like Bill Murray on it. I believe it's like pinkish. He has broken flowers. I've wanted to see that movie and haven't had a chance to do that. But I mean, from your description, it sounds really great.
Yeah, I don't think I would count it as one of my very favorite Jarmusch films, but it's, you know, probably in the top half, and I think it's pretty strong. And if you're a Bill Murray fan, I mean, he gives an excellent performance in it.
Yeah, we'll have to check that one out. So my recommendation comes from a director who recently passed away. He passed away earlier this month, and that's Richard Donner. He's this iconic guy who directed films like Superman, The Goonies, the Lethal Weapon films. You mentioned Bill Murray. He directed Scrooged. There's a film that he directed that people don't talk about very often, but I found this to be a pretty intense thriller, and that's the 1997 movie Conspiracy Theory. Now, this movie is probably not going to be talked about a lot right now because it involves a man played by Mel Gibson, who has a lot of conspiracy theories, and one of them turns out to be true. There's so many conspiracy theories out there, I even hesitate to recommend this, but it is this, it is a taunt film that really just digs deep into the paranoia of this character and what happens if that actually turned out to be true. It stars Julia Roberts, and she's great. And especially during, you know, her run in the 90s was really fantastic. She just, even in bad movies, she's just incredibly charming. And she plays the counterpart to Mel Gibson here. And yeah, a taxi driver has a bunch of conspiracy theories. One of them is true. He's being hunted down. Patrick Stewart also stars in the film, and if you're looking for just a nice thriller, it's not anything that's gonna gonna win any awards, but I found it to be pretty entertaining.
Yeah, it is an entertaining movie. I think that my vote for Best in Show would be Patrick Stewart. I think he's just a lot of fun in Conspiracy Theory. There's just so few films where he gets to be villainous that when you get one of those few films, he's just a blast to watch. And there's some funny business here with, you know, that famous schnoz of Patrick Stewart, and the indignities that are perpetrated upon it are humorous. And yeah, it's a really just a fun movie.
Yeah. Yeah. And they tie Mel Gibson up to like this wheelchair in the film towards, you know, the climax of the movie. And man, when I watched that when I was younger, I probably saw this too young. It came out when I was 10. That freaked me out. It just, how powerless he was in that situation. So there's some images that have kind of stuck with me over time. Listeners, this episode 299, 300. We won't do the AI thing next week. We'll actually record episode 300, and we've got some fun stuff planned. So make sure to tune into that, share it with your friends. And if you'd like for us to read something on the air for episode 300, hey, we'd love that. Once again, at CBelief Pod, at CBelief Pod. You can also email us, seeingandbelieving@gmail.com. Thank you for listening to this week's episode. It's brought to you by ChristandPopCulture.com. Our producer is Jonathan Clausen, who every week helps us to search for the sacred on screen. I'm Wade Beard, and my co-host is Kevin McLinathan. And until next time, this is Seeing and Believing. We'll see you later.
You have been listening to Seeing and Believing, an official production of the Christ and Pop Culture Podcast Network. Please rate and review the show in iTunes and check out our other shows at christandpopculture.com/network. Theme music by Alexander Osborne and Lindsay Miz, used under Creative Commons License 3.0.